What's up, class? This is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth, and we're back for episode 20. We're at block height 644,627, and the current price is 11,836. And Nick should be cruising in a little bit. He's back with drinks in quarantine. We'll get him to start the show soon. So without further ado, let's have Coin Icarus introduce himself.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? I'm Coin Icarus, host of the Fun with Bitcoin podcast, fellow Bitcoin plebe, and just happy to be here and shoot the Bitcoin shit with everybody.
Great to have you, Coin Icarus. Next, we got our young phenom over here, Jackie.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me, Optimist.
It's always a blast with you, Jackie. Next, we got Jestifer.
Hey, everybody. Jestifer here, and I just started a website / blog about routing nodes called satbase.org.
Dope. Did you release that article already?
I got a couple of posts on there right now. I'm posting drafts right now, so it's pretty much thrown together at this point, but at least the content is out there for the most part.
All right, dope. So what's the website again?
Satbase.org.
Satbase.org. Beautiful. Next, we got Joe in the chat. I don't know if he's going to introduce himself. Dad life. But Joe Rogers, contributor and dude of words, Bitcoin words. Next, we got Nico.
What's up, guys? My name is Nico, CEO of BitVault.com and host of the BitVault podcast. I don't look like my cartoon anymore. I've gained 20 pounds since the quarantine started.
OPSEC, bro. OPSEC. Next, we got Surfer Jim.
Hey, thanks for having me once again, guys. Being that I'm Surfer Jim, I'll tell you. The Surf Report. Long Island looking crappy for the next 4 days. Then Tuesday, looks like some stuff. And then I get on a plane Wednesday to go to Bit Block Boom, and I'm going to miss a good day of surf that day. Oh, well. I'm here for the Bitcoin talk tonight. Thanks.
Let's go. And last but certainly not least, we got Nabismo.
What's up, guys? It's Nabismo, Sat Enthusiast, and I host the getcoin.io new coiner website.
Dope. All right. Well, without further ado, we'll start the show. And as Jim said, just a little PSA. Me and Nick, or Nick and I, will be on our way to BitBlock Boom next Thursday. So we're still kind of up in the air whether we're going to have a live show. But we're definitely going to get some content out this weekend. And maybe if we get together within the time, we'll have a live show on Thursday. But that's just a little FYI. All right. And then we got a few new coiner questions up in here. Some of them are a little shitcoin related, but I'm sure we'll do a good job in steering them away. But the first one is, how do you spend Bitcoin? And I'm not exactly sure the context to this question, because there's like, there's the basic.
No one's going to be able to answer it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Sorry. Yeah. Exactly. That's kind of the funny part. So I'm not sure if the question was necessarily like how to actually spend Bitcoin, like just typing in the address and or just scanning an address and sending off some Bitcoin, or whether it was how do you spend Bitcoin as
rhetorical
money? Yeah, exactly. So like, or if there's, like the traditional noob question of, okay, is Bitcoin money? Like, where can I spend it? If like no one's taking Bitcoin. So, in the first part, the technical like way to spend Bitcoin is pretty simple. You just type in an address, it's like an email, and then you send it off. And then depending on your wallet, you may have to worry about some fees. Or maybe the fees will be handled via your wallet. But to spend Bitcoin, depending on your outlook on Bitcoin, as everyone has already said already, maybe you probably don't want to spend the Bitcoins considering that number goes up. But there's definitely a lot of places you can spend your Bitcoins, you know, like on Fold, on BitRefills, get like gift cards and buy Bitcoins, or spend your Bitcoins and buy goods like that. Or we have like Strike. If you guys are new and you want to have a good way to spend Bitcoins but exchange it for your dirty fiat for it, we would definitely recommend Strike, because then you don't have to deal with any of the legal implications of spending your Bitcoin, and you can participate in the circular economy. So it just depends on what you're trying to do. But realistically, guys, you know, use Bitcoin as a savings technology, hold it as long as you can. And then, you know, when you really, really want something and you or really need something, then exchange your Bitcoins for products and services. But in the meantime, we'd probably recommend that you just hold on to those Bitcoins as long as you can, and lower your time preference. And we'll definitely get into what time preference is in a short few. Because first we have, I think this one was brought up by Coin Icarus, but he's been getting a lot of talk about stablecoins. And so I guess we'll go into, you know, what the concept is on stablecoins and whether we should go towards them or not even use them at all. So Coinickers, do you wanna preference this one a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me the big issue with stablecoins is that, you know, they're not really stable. They're just simply the perception of stable, right? Because all they're doing is mimicking a local currency, which is constantly devaluing. So I don't really know. Like, I feel that stablecoin is kind of a misnomer, and it doesn't actually describe what they really are. And I actually think they're, at least for the time being, completely useless. You know, I don't know if they would ever become useful, but I'd say that right now, to me anyways, they're useless.
Agreed.
I don't know if anyone else wants to jump in, you know, and
anyone got a perspective on stable coins?
They're not stable.
Right. I mean,
you want to know how I know?
Yeah,
you
get it. Get it, Jim.
Nothing is stable.
Yeah, it's simply nature. And even further, like the biggest stable coin, quote unquote, is Tether, and even Tether isn't fully backed by one-to-one dollars. So I think it was like 74% backed by physical assets. So yeah, they're not even stable in that sense.
It's really hilarious that they say they're stable, because even if it was backed one-to-one with the US dollar, can we all agree that the US dollar is not stable?
Agree.
I don't think it is.
Okay, dude,
so what the heck?
Damn.
There's nothing in life that's stable. Everything is subjective value, just most people don't realize that.
No, the thing
dollar,
is, like,
you know, it's different for everybody all over the country. What it costs me to buy a Pepsi over in New York is not the same as Tennessee or California. Like, you know what, it's the same product and the same dollar, and it still costs a different amount. It's crazy. There's nothing stable on the planet.
It has the perception of stability.
I get that, but nothing is really stable. It's probably more of a perception of stability, because it doesn't appear that it changes radically very often, you know, the exchange rate of some currency. So, you know, that's the whole, I guess, the mentality. Whereas if you're pegging, everything changes dramatically if you peg it to the right thing. So when you're pegging Bitcoin to the US dollar, it looks like Bitcoin fluctuates all over the place. But you could say it's the dollar that's really fluctuating all over the place. It's just a perception thing. You know, what are you pegging against? What other thing? So what's the numerator? What's the denominator? That kind of thing. So if it's strawberries against, you know, Coca-Colas, I don't know, you know, like, is one outperforming the other massively? You know, like, you can, there's just nothing stable on the planet. It's just how you look at it.
I think also the issue with it, right? Like, the reason why I think they called them stable coins is so that it invokes that idea of trust, right?
I'm
so
sure
the person You know, like it builds this idea. Oh, you know, like, yeah, I can trust these, but it's just not true. Like you said.
Well, you know, let's go back to a different angle on this whole thing, right? What if it was relatively stable and you could say, okay, you know, I know what my purchasing power is going to be if I hold this thing. So now what are you holding if you're not holding dollars in your bank account that are backed by the government, the Fed or whatever, or if you're in a different country, some other central bank, or Tether backed by, who is it, Bitfinex or whoever issues Tether or one of those, right? So they might want to say that it's decentralized like Bitcoin and it's immutable ledger with proof of work or some other crap, but we all know it's not, because there's only one thing that counts, and that's Bitcoin. So all the other ones, no matter how stable they might be or pegged to something that they might be, there's always the risk of centralized entities screwing with it and you losing, you know? So there's that whole risk right there. So then I guess you can balance, like, what's the risk? Should I just hold dollars or should I hold this other private currency made up by some company in China, I think, right? I mean, isn't that where it all comes from? I don't know the whole history of Tether, but somebody else must know. Nico, you probably would know that, right?
Yeah. Hold on. Okay. Cool. Sorry. I'm just pouring some ketchup. Anyway, because I'm fat. So Tether actually was kind of an invention of Brock Pierce and this other American guy. And it was actually pretty funny because it started out like really fucking, sorry, very legitimately. And it was actually backed, right? But then what happened was that Bitfinex got hacked for a pretty big amount. So the perception is that they started playing around with Tether to kind of cover their losses. And, you know, there's all that FUD, that Tether FUD, how like Tether wasn't backed. But actually something very significant happened. And the significant part was that no one cared, right? And the reason that no one cared was exactly what Jim was saying earlier. It's, you know, it was the perception, right? Like the fact that you feel that you're trading your Bitcoin for something more stable is what the market actually cared about. And if you go to CoinMarketCap and you look at the CoinMarketCap of Tether, you'll see that it was literally pegged to the dollar. But then all of a sudden, the value of it started being volatile. But when I mean volatile, it's just fluctuating between $1.02 to 97 cents. So you could actually see the moment that the whole article came out that Tether wasn't backed by anything. And then it started to fluctuate. So what's actually keeping the value of Tether isn't the fact that it's backed by anything. It's the fact that people have a perception that it's backed by something. So very interesting.
And I think the way you worded that, Nico, is like a really good way to explain to people. You said that the perception of stability. And I think that's why a lot of people get lured into stablecoins, is because they have that perception that the dollar is stable and they're unaware of, you know, the inflation, like 2% inflation every year, or like what's happened this year, like money printer go burr. I think the statistics is that the U.S. dollar supply got inflated by like 20% this year alone. And so, you know, like to the average person, the perception of stability in the dollar is, you know, $1 equals $1. And, you know, it's not like losing value to the average person. But once you know the, you know, economic and monetary trickery, you realize that, you know, $1 doesn't equal $1. And so that's hence why we're all Bitcoiners. It's like, well, you know, I'll take the Bitcoin volatility because I'm not losing value year on year, you know, year upon year. It's just part of the free market game that we're playing with the, you know, free market monetary tool. And so I think that's a very good way of stating it, you know, the perception of stability. And, you know, guys, if we're honest with ourselves and everyone else, the only real stable coin is one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. So, you know, to the noobs out there, that's the only thing you got to realize.
That's how you should be thinking about shit. I mean, about things. You know, you should be thinking about things in terms of, like, you shouldn't be You shouldn't be thinking of like how much dollars do I have. You should only be thinking about how many Bitcoins do I have, or how many Satoshis do I have stacked, right? And the moment that you do that transition, right, something really cool happens. You stop caring about the fluctuations, right? Because I know that all you guys, right, like, you know, for me, surviving the bear market, I'm sure a lot of you guys agree, was a walk in the park, because all I cared about was stacking more. I wasn't cared about the daily or the monthly or the yearly price fluctuations. You know, it's nice that the price goes up, but all I care about is, do I have more Bitcoin today than I had tomorrow?
Exactly. I think American Hodel put it the best. He's like, once you can account for your wealth in sats, you're already ahead of 99% of all the population. And so, you know, Bitcoin to us is already a unit of account. But I guess we're just ahead of the party. Well, I think we beat that dead horse. And this next one is about DeFi, guys. And not the decentralized finance like the meme is supposedly about, but the DeFi coin. And to be honest, I don't even know what it is. Like, it's a bunch of crap, and like that'll be my 2 cents. But I know Coinickers kind of had some good things to say about it last night, so I'm gonna pass him the mic.
All right. Well, I don't know how long I'm gonna go on about it, but essentially, okay. So I've been asking around. Okay, like I've definitely been asking around. Different chats and trying to get somebody to explain what DeFi is. And so far, nobody can actually explain it properly. And I find it interesting because I think it's simply just, another scam that's on Ethereum. Like, it's just another way to get a whole bunch of people in, like, you know, this yield farming thing. And then, you know, there was that the YAM token. You know, that like was at like $126 and is worth like pennies now. And, you know, they're talking about this like rebasing, and it's all these terms, okay, that all these people think they sound smart, but nobody knows what they're talking about. Like, all they know is that, like, all they know is if they made money or they lost money, but they have no clue what they're talking about. So I would just say stay away.
Yeah. Everything is outside of Bitcoin is just a reason to take your Bitcoins. Does anyone have some 2 cents on DeFi, their point of view?
It's shit.
What was the exact question?
Well, the way that I worded it is just the mess that is DeFi. But I think the question is basically like, what is DeFi?
Oh, so I thought you were referring to a specific token called DeFi, which there might actually be one of. But yeah. DeFi is more of a concept, a decentralized finance, where I believe there are more than one token that participates in this idea of... I honestly, it's so convoluted, I can't make any sense of it, but it's a way of taking tokens, which are supposed to, I guess, represent value, which to me is supposed to then represent money, and loaning it out, leveraging it, somehow getting returns on it, you know, trading up, trading in and out of a different crowd. Who the hell knows? It's very convoluted. The point is that I think people think they're going to make money getting involved in it, which means, you know, they're going to make some kind of profit in some money that they want to count it in, whether it's Bitcoin or dollars or some stupid token. And, you know, if their number goes up of these tokens, maybe they'll feel good. But in the end, they're just trading a bunch of centralized digital files that can be manipulated by people they don't know. So it's really kind of crazy that it's even happening. So whether it's a single token called DeFi or this whole concept called DeFi, be very wary of anything that makes it sound good. And if you don't understand it, which most people don't, just run away. That's my opinion.
But so I definitely agree with everything that that Coinicris and Jim said, and I don't understand the mechanics of it, like you guys said. But, you know, essentially what you need to know, right, or what the listener needs to know, is that it stands for decentralized finance, the problem is that it's not decentralized, right? Why is it not decentralized, right? Because at the end of the day, someone controls the contract. A human being controls the contract. So the fact that a human being can make the rules and could change the rules at their whim does not make it decentralized, right? So, and CoinIcarus said this extremely well the other day in a tweet, you're essentially replacing the Federal Reserve with an Ethereum developer, right? You have to trust in that developer and you have to audit the code, which 99.99% of us can't do. And so there's a lot of trust involved. And when there's trust involved, that's not decentralized. It's not decentralized because you're trusting in a single party to play by the rules, right?
Yeah, as Joe put in the chat, Bitcoin is DeFi. You know, Bitcoin is the only decentralized finance that there is. No one's in control of it.
I agree.
And you know, they're essentially trying to create a meme that they aren't, and you know, that's what Bitcoin is. So try not to get sucker. Yeah, get it, Jim.
I'm sorry. I was going to explain it a different way. The idea that you could be able to trust in a trustless way a contract that links some blockchains, because the concept of the underlying blockchain is trustable because Bitcoin has proven it. Like, this is this whole extrapolation. You got to go one to the other to the other. So you go, if you start with Bitcoin, you say Bitcoin created a system, or a system was created known as Bitcoin, where you can trust that it produces a token that nobody can manipulate, has gone up tremendously in value over 11 years, and lots of other people made ones just like it. And, you know, we can do different stuff that they can't do. So you should come over here and use this token because it's the same thing. And now, because it does everything Bitcoin does, we've made it do all these other things. But, of course, it never could have done the very first thing. So everything they add on top of it just makes it even worse. And it's never decentralized, ever. So it's really such a misnomer. It's beyond belief to me. I can't even fathom how these adults can walk around, because many of them are adults that are they got to know they're lying. Like, they're straight up lying. It's not decentralized. It never will be. I could talk all night. It's ridiculous. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Psychedelic Bart put it. He put a tweet yesterday or 2 days ago, and he was like, "Does anyone have that Vitalik tweet where he said if there was an evil person making an ERC-20 token that he would stop them?" And I found it on Twitter, and there is an actual tweet of Vitalik saying if an evil person was trying to use an ERC-20 token to, you know, basically try to create their own money, that he would stop them. And just that very statement right there proved to anyone worth their salt that, you know, Ethereum is not decentralized. It's, you know, if someone can stop the contract, then it's definitely not decentralized, guys. So anyone want to put in some last 2 cents before we change topics or change angles real quick? All right. I think we got that one good. Okay, so this next, we're not necessarily going to get some questions, but we're going to be discussing a few broader concepts that us as Bitcoiners are very familiar with, but maybe someone that is new to the space might not totally understand yet. And so the first concept is game theory. So does anyone have an eloquent statement on what exactly game theory is and how it pertains to Bitcoin before I just start rambling? Nico?
Yeah, I got you. Okay, so game theory is basically the study of how people would act in a game, right? So, like, basically, if you were studying, like, TikTok, the game, you know, with the X's and the circles?
With a very simple
game. Yeah, tic-tac-toe, right? So if you're playing tic-tac-toe, right, is a great example, because there's only so many moves. And if both parties know how to play tic-tac-toe, it ends in a tie every single time, right? So game theory is basically the study of how people would act. And the reason that it's so significant in Bitcoin is because Bitcoin forces everybody to play by the rules. And you saw that, right? The moment that the Bitcoin Cash fork happened, right? all of a sudden these guys started playing against the rules. And what's really cool about proof of work, right, is that it actually makes it's actually more economically profitable to mine legitimately than it would be to attack Bitcoin, right? So it kind of forces this. I like to see it as like a giant game of Mexican standoff, right? Like the nodes have a gun to the miners' heads, and the miners kind of have a gun to the nodes, right? Because the miners say, listen, we could just turn off all machines and then the next block is going to take forever to be found, right? So it's really, really, sorry, Jim, this is totally justified. It's really fucking cool. It's a really cool because it's so many moving pieces together, and they just make Bitcoin for what it is, right? And if you start thinking from the perspective of like game theory, like you start applying the game theory perspective to any cryptocurrency, you understand very quickly why shitcoins are shitcoins, right? Because the game theory of Bitcoin is literally it's freaking perfect, right? Like, and no one believes it. Everyone thinks Bitcoin's a scam because they don't understand how well it's set up, right? How well how incentivized miners are to play by the rules rather than cheating, how incentivized nodes are to play by the rules rather than cheating. And if you look at Ethereum, right, the reason that DeFi is impossible is because the people creating the contracts, the only thing that's stopping them from creating a malicious contract to steal people's money is morals. And we all know that that's not a very good reason, right? And if you look at Bitcoin, the miners and the hash rate, the reason it's going up is not because of morals, right? No, it's literally because it's literally more profitable to mine, right? So it creates this beautiful dance where everyone's just playing by the rules because they're incentivized to do so.
Yeah, like I say it all the time, you know, Bitcoin has a way of domesticating greed. And Nico put it really well, where the game theory in Bitcoin implies that you're better off to play by the rules and, you know, for lack of better terms, get rich while playing the game, or trying to spend a lot of money and just losing that capital. So, like you said, the game theory in Bitcoin is like a Mexican standoff, and so everyone's watching each other and making sure, you know, that they're playing by the rules or else. And you know, it's like skin in the game. Everyone's money's on the line, and if you want to try to go against everyone else, well, you're most likely going to lose whatever capital you put into the game. So, Jockey's killing me. He says, everyone gangsta until Bitcoin incentivizes everyone to play by the rules. I love you, Jockey. Anyone want to spit some wisdom on game theory before I get to the next
Justifer.
Topic?
Justifer knows what's up, man.
Yeah, Jess, get in there. You're getting shot.
You know, I have Games and Decisions. The book on my shelf, so I just grabbed it trying to find a definition, but it was basically saying that game theory is the modern mathematical approach to conflicts of interest, and it like touches on priorities a little bit, but you know, I tried to read this book and it goes way over my head. I felt like my brain was turning into oatmeal, but one of the most interesting problems was like the prisoner's dilemma. The name of the book again is called Games and Decisions. I think that's probably the most relevant because in a way we have been sort of prisoners to our monetary system, and Bitcoin has some incentives that are all aligned so that we can actually escape from that system where we're stuck in these just having to choose between fiat systems or having to rely on gold or other, you know, formerly monetary media. So we get to play our own game, and it's a game that you can only win if you play. So that's
just
and exactly. Yeah. Like I'll just expand to like just for right. Like, look, if you, once you understand the concept of game theory, you'll apply that to everything, not only Bitcoin, right? So like, if you look at the fiat system rewards a certain type of behavior financially, right? The, you know, anything, basketball rewards a certain type of behavior, you know, to score, right? So if you look at the incentives, right, you'll understand how the kind of whatever it is, if it's a game, you'll understand what incentivizes people. And to further complicate the study, right, if you really want to dive in deep, it's essentially you're studying, like, think about it, right? Like, I'm explaining at it from the surface level, but if you want to get complicated, like, what will the guy in the next brokerage firm, what is he betting on? Why is he betting on it? You know, what's in it for him? What other move can he do, right? And of course, you can apply mathematics to that, but man, that's way beyond my pay grade. But man, it's really interesting. I recommend every single person, including the people listening to this, definitely check it out, because it just broadens your mind, because you start looking at everything differently. And instead of looking at people for people, and I know this sounds terrible, but it's the reality. Instead of looking at someone like, okay, he's a friend of mine, whatever, you know, this and that, you'll start looking at it life from incentives, right? And I think it was American Hold that actually tweeted this out. And that's game theory 101. Like, no one is better than their incentives, right? So that's essentially what game theory is, right? It's just figuring out what are all the incentives, and that will give you a better perspective on what that person's next move is going to be.
Jesper or Nico, well, actually, I mean, anyone, maybe we should explain what the prisoner's dilemma is for the listener.
Oh boy. Let me get that queued up.
But, I mean, I could do it. I could do it relatively well. So the prisoner's dilemma is basically, as the name suggests, the dilemma of the prisoner. So he's essentially, there's two prisoners, and the warden or what have you pins them against each other, and he tells one person that his partner has basically ratted him out. And so he's got a few choices to make, whether to abide, you know, whether to fall for the trap and say that he was that his other friend is ratting him out, so he can either spill the beans or know that the warden is trying to play a game and trick him into ratting out his partner and remaining quiet. And there's odds to what the outcome is. So like, if he rats his friend out, then it's either he's ratting his friend out, or they're both ratting each other out, or, you know, he can stay quiet and then potentially he gets ratted out, or he can know that his friend isn't ratting him out and stay quiet. And so the prisoner's dilemma is, you know, like, what choice does the prisoner make in that situation? And it depends on the person, but usually the best route of going about it is to not say anything at all and know that the warden's pitting you against each other. And so that's, you know, Bitcoin in a nutshell is like, what, you know, what I think someone said it the best in the chat. It says that the only way to win is to not play the game. And so that's kind of what we're doing with Bitcoin. You know, how we have this meme of opt out with Bitcoin because the fiat game is rigged against us. The financial monetary tools are rigged against the average person. And the only winning play is to opt out or not play their game. And I guess...
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I think we've watched it play out a couple of times throughout history that is like covered in depth in the Bitcoin Standard, where hard money outcompetes easy money. And so that's the way that Bitcoin wins in this game, that where you want to play with the hard money, because you know this Bitcoin is very difficult to be corrupted, probably impossible to be corrupted at this point, just because of the distributed nature and the way that we run with consensus.
Beautiful. All right. Well, I think we brushed on that one pretty good. The next topic that we shall discuss is time preference. And we brought it up in the beginning of the show of, and the way we usually say is like lower your time preference. And by that, you know, when we say that, usually in the Bitcoin space, what we're saying is, you know, hold your Bitcoins for longer and basically consider how much you really want whatever it is you're trying to spend your money on, because is it really worth what you're spending that those Bitcoins on today? Because tomorrow those Bitcoins are going to be worth more. And so by lowering your time preference, you definitely reconsider every purchase, because you realize, well, this, you know, these 100,000 sats today may only be worth roughly around $10, but in the future, depending on how long you hold it, they're going to be worth a lot more. So if you can just lower your time preference and reconsider your purchases, you might rethink that option. But I know, like, I know there's a specific definition of time preference. Does anyone have that on hand? Mentally, Jim, do you want to give me some wisdom on time preference? I know you'll say it a little better than I will.
I guess I would think of it as a preference of what you want now versus what you want eventually. You have to balance your life in a way that, you know, you're trying to satisfy the most amount of wants with the resources you have available. So you have to consider your time preferences. You know, there are some things you can't get without doing other things first. And so when you stop and think about things, plan out your life, you got to think about your time preferences. And one of the things we like about Bitcoin is we feel that by taking some of our productivity that we earn, we go to work, we get some money, we got to pay some bills, and maybe we got a little left over. That's our time. That's our productivity. And we say, okay, what are we going to do with this for the meantime? And we look at our time preferences of the things that we like and the things that we eventually want. And we say, you know what? If my guess is right, this thing's going to be worth a lot more in its purchasing power in the future, whether I cash it back into some fiat currency or spend it as Bitcoin. I think it won't lose its ability to buy me at least what it can buy me now, as long as I hold it long enough. And so we think that that changes our time preferences. We think, wow, if that's the case, I can be really well off in the future, which means I better plan really smart for that. So what am I going to really do with my life between now and then? And how am I going to make sure this all works out really well for me? So we're going to take care of our Bitcoin. We're going to store it ourselves. We're going to run our own full nodes. We're going to verify the system. We're going to keep it honest. Going back to game theory, we all joined this because this system makes it such that, as Nico said, nobody benefits by cheating. You actually benefit by enforcing the rules. And so we're all so aware of this that we can put a lot of stock in the fact that it's going to last and be around for the future and probably be worth more. So it's all reflected in everything we care about, our subjective value of things and everything else. And when you have this sort of thing that you think you can count on being worth a lot in the future, it changes your perspective on everything and literally just changes your time preference on everything you care about. That work?
Beautiful, Jim. Just for jumping.
Yeah, so it's the time preference is the comparison of how much you value present consumption, you know, divided by the how much you value future consumption. So if you value future consumption far more than present consumption, you're going to be working much harder in the present so that you can really enjoy, you know, retirement or whatever your future consumption would be. So you're planning ahead and you're also being more productive. So I noticed I was spending a ton of time like answering questions about, you know, how to become a profitable routing node and how to be a good routing node, that I was like, oh my gosh, like I need to leverage my time here. And so now I'm incentivized to like put my efforts towards, you know, higher productivity. So this is why, like, you know, throw together a website so I can leverage my time and do a little bit more so that I can enjoy more in the future. Anyways, that's the hope.
Absolutely. I completely agree with Jessifer. And honestly, like, the secret sauce is, like, it's very simple. Just have income, right? And then the second is, like, don't over leverage yourself, because what happens if you over leverage yourself and there's a dip, you're going to care a lot. But if you have just enough in Bitcoin where, like, you feel good about it, but at the same time, you still have money to live, right? Like, you still have money to pay for things. You still have money to live, you know, like, that's responsible. Because if you overdo it, and again, don't listen to me because I totally didn't listen to this advice, but, you know, like, if you overdo it, you know, you might find yourself in a position where you're going to have to sell some coin, you know, to cover whatever it is you're doing, right? So, you know, I think that's the secret sauce, right? Is, like, having income where it could fund your lifestyle and buy Bitcoin. And then at the same time, you know, like, if you make, you know, 100, you know, like, don't put $99 into Bitcoin.
So, I mean, by having the right amount in Bitcoin, you mean going all in, right?
I mean,
I'm just messing
up. I mean, I guess I was, like, talking about what the responsible thing is to do, but if your question is that I do that, absolutely not.
I love it. Here, look, Joe
responsible.
Rogers.
Responsible.
Go, Jim.
Responsible is also subjective. Everybody has to choose what they define as responsible, so put whatever you feel comfortable with.
Beautiful. Joe Rogers put in a good comment. He's on Dad Life right now, so he's just in the chat, and he says safety uses high and low to describe time preference, and he believes short and long are better because you think of time as linear. So high or short time preference is to spend or consume soon, and low or long time preference is to save for future spending. So as Bitcoiners, we definitely advocate the lowering your time preference, because it'll change your life. Personally, I had very high time preference in my life before I got into Bitcoin. I was never much of a saver, and then once I realized that I didn't have to trade my now for my future or my future for my now, I became a saver. And, you know, Bitcoins is the greatest savings technology that we have currently. And, you know, we have the meme, you don't change Bitcoin, Bitcoin changes you. And so how about stories?
Do you see how you just explained game theory? Like, you just explained it, right? Fiat doesn't reward you for saving, right? It actually is built in a way where it incentivizes you to spend it. And that's purposefully, right? Bitcoin rewards you for saving, so you're incentivized to save, right? It's literally game theory. Like, it's just the way it is, right? Like, it's incentives, right? Like, you're incentivized to do you're incentivized to go, you know, go to a strip club and spend your dollar bills because, you know, I mean, that's a terrible example. I'm sorry, Jim, but, like, you're incentivized to go to the supermarket or to buy an Xbox because the reason I said dollar bills was I wasn't messing around, because, like, you know, you see that, man, you just throw dollars for nothing, right? My question to you is, would you do that with Bitcoin? None of us in this room would do that with Bitcoin, but the dollar is so trash in people's eyes that you don't care. You literally throw it. You know, it's stupid. But with Bitcoin, it's like that dollar worth of Bitcoin might be $100 one day, and you know that. So you're incentivized to hoard it, to save, right? And that's actually better for you as a human being. It's better for you. It's better for your future. It's better for your family. It's better for your well-being. So you could kind of understand why some people are the way they are because of the fiat system.
Beautiful. And that's a beautiful segue into our next topic. But before we move on, I like what Joe put in the chat. He says, we are short time preference to buy Bitcoin, but we're long time preference on spending Bitcoin. So as someone listening to this, if you're new to this space, maybe rewind the last 5 to 10 minutes on that rant and absorb Joe's wisdom. But the next topic is essentially what Nico was just talking about. The last topic before we move on is the Cantillon effect. It's said a lot of very many different ways amongst Bitcoiners, but as far as I'm concerned, that's how it goes down. Wink, wink, Coin Icarus. But the Cantillon effect, as Nico was saying, is it's the fiat monetary game that, you know, you as the listener is a part of right now. And especially right now, this is, what's the date today? August 2020, sometime towards the end of August. We're still in this whole COVID pandemic. And at the start of this, if you weren't asleep or under a rock, you would have heard or learned that they're printed trillions of dollars seemingly overnight. But a lot of that money isn't going into your pocket. You may have gotten $1,200 or what have you, but most of that money got printed into Wall Street or corporations. And so the Cantillon effect, in simple terms, is essentially the people closest to the money printer or the money spigot get most of the profits, and most of us, the average person, doesn't get any of that those effects, except on the inverse. Once the money makes its way out into the normal person's hands, the dollar supply has been inflated so much that your dollars become worthless depending on how much they are printed. So anyone want to go in a little bit on Cantillon effect? Don't be shy now. Jessifer?
I think, you know, most of the Bitcoiners are aware of what quantitative easing is, where we get to watch a whole bunch of money be created, which goes directly into, you know, Wall Street, because it suddenly disincentivizes holding and saving cash. And it forces people to make decisions to invest that money. Because, hey, money is so plentiful, why don't I invest this? And so that's how we end up, you know, in situations that have, you know, massive financial instability, where we can have these huge crashes, like in the stock market, for our investments that should have been like only long-term investments. But now, as far as like the Cantillon effect, like we're watching this stock market just pump like crazy right now because there's infinite QE, quantitative easing. So, but by the time that money starts filtering through the system, as soon as it starts trickling down, it suddenly becomes worth a lot less. Like our buying power decreases, and that shows itself as inflation. And everyone's inflation rate is not the same, because, you know, here we are where we can buy, you know, jeans from like H&M or whatever, and they're super, super cheap. So, you know, the government is able to say, or the Fed is able to say, hey, look, no inflation. But then as soon as we look at the costs of education and medical expenses, we're like, oh, my God. But nobody says inflation. We're just thinking, oh, education costs too much and, you know, medicine is too expensive. But that's absolute nonsense. That's just inflation playing out, and everyone's inflation is different.
Jim, do you want to speak?
Okay, sure. Yeah, so the Cantillon effect. So whoever's in charge of the money that makes the money and injects it into society gets the benefit of that money at its full purchasing power for the current supply of money. But ultimately, as it floods into society, prices adjust over time to this extra money and they go up. But and everybody sort of accepts this as a natural thing, and many people think it's a desirable thing. But if you think about it a different way, and a good way to think about it is to read Robert Breedlove's recent article that he wrote, something about Bitcoin and slavery. Wait, hold on, let me check. It's called Masters and Slaves of Money, an article he wrote. And he talks about the history of some monies, and I'll just discuss the one, the first one that he talks about in there, which is about these beads that the Africans used to use as money. And English travelers used to go there, and they realized they could replicate these things in glass factories back in England. And they came back and they used them as money. They were basically counterfeit. And the Africans didn't realize it at the time. And so they accepted it as money. And so the English who were making these beads were basically stealing the wealth of the Africans because they thought they were getting these scarce beads that they were using as money. And slowly but surely, because they were inflating the monetary system, they were literally stealing the wealth of the people that they were giving these worthless beads to. And when you read the article, he explains it really well. But when the government just makes money out of thin air, they're basically stealing the wealth of everybody else who already has money. And since the government forces us to use their money, it's a forced theft on us, one that many people refer to as taxation without representation. So when the Fed just makes money, like it just did, and just throws that out into society, it's screwing everybody. And now, since the U.S. dollar has been pegged to every other currency since the Bretton Woods Agreement back in 1947 or something, every country in the world is screwed by our country printing more. But the average guy just says, oh, there's more money, I get more. Whoopee, you know, everybody's getting a free check or this, that, or the other thing. Other countries want to use dollars because they're better stores of value than their own currencies because they're doing the same thing and those other countries printing, you know, on and on. And so the effect just, you know, it just keeps going. And of course, the poor keep getting poorer and the rich keep getting richer. So Cantillon effect also describes the upward shifting of wealth, not just inflation, but the upward shifting of wealth from poorer people to richer people. And it's theft at a monumental level. The Fed should be absolved and everybody who runs it, every central banker of the world should be in prison or hanging from a rope.
Yeah, it's just, when people talk about inflation, like, it disproportionately affects poorer people. Because the thing about inflation is that, like, people have this perception that it just happens to everybody. That's not true at all. The first person that gets the dollar printed from the Fed, they don't feel anything. But then the person that they give it to feels it a little bit more, right? And that trickles all the way down to, like, the lower classes of society. And what's even more messed up is that if the lower classes are the ones that need more cash than the upper classes, because the upper classes don't maintain their wealth in cash. They maintain their wealth in equities, right? Equities, real estate, gold, Bitcoin, whatever. So the lower classes, you know, they'll make, you know, $500 and they'll keep it in $500, right? And they're getting cheaper. And just to add to Jim's point before, where, you know, essentially, because the U.S. has this global reserve currency status, when we printed 3-point-something trillion, you know, to kind of bail us out of, you know, the coronavirus thing and, you know, prop up the stock market like it is today, the United States didn't get poorer. The whole world got poorer. We outsourced the hell out of our debt. And because everyone's using the dollar around the world to make purchases, even if it's like country to country, they just had to bear the brunt of it. You know, it's such a scam. It's such a total scam. But just to kind of like put game theory into that, man, that system is incentivized. Like, people are incentivized to play the game that way. It's not the fact that like fiat is terrible. It's the fact it's architecture. It's the way it's designed. Like this was going to happen inevitably because it rewards people for cheating, man, for accumulating as much wealth as possible, right? And the thing about Bitcoin is that it actually hurts you if you stop playing by the rules. And there's great examples in Bitcoin's history where the moment someone started playing by the rules, I mean, stopped playing by the rules, first of all, because we all believe in it, the first line of defense were the people itself. So everyone was immediate to point out that guy's cheating. That guy's a scammer. So like, if you think about it, like we are all, I don't want to say brainwashed, but we are all, in a way, we're all like acting as nodes, all of us, you know, because Bitcoiners are the first person to go on Twitter and call out a scam, right? So it's, you have to understand that like, it's all about incentives, man, at the end of the day, right? And Bitcoin's incentives are just so dope, and not for a select few, for anyone that chooses to participate.
Beautiful, Nico. Beautiful. Well, we'll keep it moving. I kind of like that that little discuss broader concept. So we'll probably rope that in into other episodes. But at the hope of keeping this episode pretty short, we're gonna kind of move on to some current events and cool things that we saw on Twitter this week. And the first one is last week we talked about MicroStrategy exchanging $250 million of their cash reserves into Bitcoin. And this week we saw that a smaller company, but it was a restaurant in Canada, Ontario, Canada. Their Middle Eastern food, I think they call it Tahinis would be the name. I don't know. I'm pretty bad at saying words, obviously. But they came out on Twitter and they stated that they exchanged all of their cash reserves into Bitcoin, and Bitcoin Twitter exploded. And the reason for that is we've been saying for a long time that soon, and not like a, you know, years from now, but relatively soon, other companies are going to catch this bug and realize that the best play in the market right now is to hold Bitcoin. And so, you know, people are first going to start doing that and hold most of their cash reserves into Bitcoin. And now we're seeing companies starting to do that. And though they're a smaller company, you know, they're ahead of the game, because as soon as the price appreciates, they're going to be in the green. And as Nico said, I think it was last week, you know, the next couple of plays forward is once smaller countries start holding, you know, their reserves in Bitcoins. But I think it's a good point to talk about that. You know, companies are going to start doing that exact play, holding cash reserves in Bitcoin and see their profits increase. And so what was your guys' feeling when you heard about this week?
Bullish. I was very excited. I shared that article with my father right away about the MicroStrategy one, but also the Tahini one was pretty cool too. Do you know if they were accepting Bitcoin too, or if it's just...
I'm not sure. I was looking on their Twitter, but I didn't really see it. So I'm sure maybe they'll start accepting, but I just know for sure it was cash reserves.
Yeah.
But what'd your dad say once you told him about MicroStrategy?
It got him to look at Bitcoin a lot more seriously, because, you know, he's kind of just brushed it off as a pump and dump scam or something. I mean, I've had conversations with him at length about it, and he's kind of gotten to understand it a little bit better, but he still doesn't own any in his portfolio, and he's of retirement age and looking for investments, I guess, other investments. And I've pretty much got him convinced. We were golfing the other day, and I think I have him convinced to at least put like a couple thousand into Bitcoin to see how it does. You know, saying what's the worst that could happen? You lose a couple thousand. The best thing that could happen is, you know, you'd be set for the rest of your retirement and then some, maybe. Maybe not. I don't, who knows how long they'll be retired for, but yeah, that really helped to catch his attention, because the people that own MicroStrategy are some big time capital players like Vanguard, and I think the other one was like Blackstone. I don't know, some other really well known investment firm. And it BlackRock. Yes. So that kind of, I guess he would trust in them, and I think that he has done business with Vanguard in the past. And it got him to, I actually got him to read the article, and hopefully I'll be reporting soon that I got him to, you know, buy some actual Bitcoin.
Bullish, bullish. What's your outlook on it, Jim?
Oh, inevitable. yeah, it's only, you know, a matter of time. Some smart people are going to get to the people with a lot of money, and they're going to actually look. Finally, actually pay attention. Okay, how do I not trust this? How can I trust this? Wait, who runs the code? You're telling me nobody runs it? What do you mean? There's consensus? What's a BIP? What are you talking about? You know, the million questions we've all had to, like, what the heck is a Schnorr signature? What is this whole crap they're talking about? You know, somebody did all that and said, whoa, I can stick dollars there and government can't get them, no one can touch it, like all these things, and it might be worth more. Oh, it's secure, not secure, I mean scarce, you know, like you know, just like everybody who's into Bitcoin, now you just found somebody who's never into Bitcoin but has a ton of money because they run a giant company worldwide and they got to stick it somewhere, $250 million, and like, ah, let's just park this in Bitcoin for a little while. And they're up like a lot since they bought it. I saw some tweet, they were up like 12%, like couple million or couple dozen million like, you know, a couple weeks, which made it look really good. Of course, we know it can go back down, but you know, if they're a halfway decent medium term play for a year or two, they're probably going to do very well, and maybe even astonishingly well. And who was it, Invisible, said something about their investors, you know, people that have invested into this company like BlackRock and Vanguard. I heard, I think it was Preston Fish talking about it, saying they were no way, they wouldn't have announced that they were even going to do it had they not ran it past those dudes, who also have to be sort of convinced at some level, because they can't afford for these people to make this announcement and have the stock tank. And of course, it didn't. After they bought it, the stock went up, what, like 12 or 13%, I heard, something like that. So this is big. The ripple effect isn't even felt yet. You know, the amount of people that are looking at Bitcoin right now that you don't even know, that own hundreds of millions of dollars worth of assets that might shift it around, the price could be like 50 grand in 3 weeks. You have no idea. It's crazy times.
Face ripping. Like, the next pump is going to make 2017 look like nothing.
Yeah, and when it goes past 20 grand, it's going to go to like 50 in 3 days or something insane or whatever, and you know, big pullbacks, but it's going to get the world's attention at a new level. And yeah, things are going to be different this next bull run for sure.
Man, I can't wait. It's going to be some crazy times. Anyone else want to chime in, has some thoughts on this before I change the topic? Well, Coinicarus in the chat said it's going to be, what'd you say? Face ripping and melting pumps. So that's going to be fun to look forward to. And we got Nick back in the chat a few minutes ago. And I wanted to ask him, because I was in a Bitcoin Magazine's Drink with Quarantine. And so I want to know, Nick, if you're there, what was the most bullish thing that you heard on that show today?
Unfortunately, there is a ton of DeFi talk, which really bored me after a while, because I don't give a fuck about DeFi, don't give a fuck about Ethereum, but Jack Mallers made me bullish, because there was this the owner of the FTX exchange was talking about how DeFi and Ethereum is good, blah blah blah, and Jack Mallish just came out the cut like, I don't give a fuck about DeFi. He's like, I don't know what it is. I don't care. It's not better than Bitcoin. And then he went on this rant, and Pierre Richard joined in eventually, and they were just going on this rant of, you know, Bitcoin is the absolute best way to store your wealth. There's nothing better than it. And people in the chat were going off because, and I agree with them 100%. They were like, why are we in 2020 and still having these conversations of, oh, is this coin going to dethrone Bitcoin? Or, oh, is this coin going to, you know, is this coin faster than Bitcoin? Blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just, it's all noise. And I don't know. I just thought the most bullish thing was the chat calling out a bunch of the DeFi bullshit. And yeah, that was it for me. It was Jack Mallers going off on rants on how Bitcoin's better, Pierre Richard as well. And then mainly the chat, just that we had like 50 people in there watching and they were just going off on DeFi and how Bitcoin's just superior in every way.
Perfect. Well, Nick, you weren't here for the beginning of the show, but that's a nice little cherry on top of what we've been saying all day. We had a little DeFi talk and we basically said the same thing. Well, this next one, this is a tweet from that we saw via American HODL, but it just makes a really good point. And considering that I would consider everyone in here a Bitcoin pleb, I think it's a very worthy note to talk about. So I'm going to stream this right now, and give me 1 second. But to the listeners on the podcast, we got it's just a tweet by American HODL. I'll try to put it into the show notes. And he writes, hey, what do you get when 9 plebs walk into Cash App? And then he wrote, about $1 million worth of BTC. And then under it, he goes, think shitcoiners have this much collective conviction? Doubtful. I'll do the larger collage when I get to a computer tomorrow. And so the tweet is just basically everyone, well, not everyone, a bunch of Bitcoin plebs, Cash App purchases. And if you're listening, they're up, you know, they're big figures. They're 101,000, 167,000, 121,500, 75,000, 88.1K, 80.1K, 108.4K, 120,000, and $107,000. So the reason I thought it'd be a good point to bring up is because, like, HODL put in the bottom tweet, it's like, what gives all of us Bitcoiners so much conviction to basically drop their whole life savings? And like, I'm pretty sure like everyone in this chat will give a good synapse of it. But just to paint out and give an outline of it, it's once you get deep enough in the Bitcoin rabbit hole, it's like something sparks in your brain and you become fanatical about it, and you just have to essentially throw everything you want or you can into Bitcoin to survive. It's like me and Nico were joking earlier in the show. He was like, be responsible with your buys. And I'm like, so that means going all in. And as you can see, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a big name in Bitcoin or you're just an average Joe. People have conviction in this Bitcoin project. You know, people have skin in the game. People are throwing down a lot of money to buy as many Bitcoins as we can. And there's not that many Bitcoins left. So the game is going to get really crazy. So I'm going to pass the question on to you guys. Like, what do you think, or where do you think this conviction comes from? Or at least maybe share your personal story and your own convictions. How about Nick? I love when Nick goes in. Just let's hear a little Nick rant for a moment.
I just want to say for this, like, a lot of people will say, oh, how is Bitcoin going to pump to new highs? There's no way everyone's going to buy Bitcoin. I'm not going to buy Bitcoin. My friends aren't going to buy Bitcoin. It can't go higher. People don't realize the plebs are just going to pump Bitcoin themselves. And like, even if you're not a pleb, if you're buying Bitcoin, there's only so much of it out there. And the more and more money you put in, over time, the price is going to go up. So we don't, like, Bitcoin doesn't give a fuck if you get into Bitcoin or not. Like, we're going to the moon with or without you.
We're just gonna outbid each other and keep pumping that price.
I'll jump in here a little bit.
Yeah, get it, Nico.
So look, Bitcoin is binary, right? To an extent. And why do I say this? Like, it either goes to zero or it keeps going up, right? And the reason for that is the miners. You have to understand that the mining industry right now is like, their annual revenue is, man, what is it? It's like man, I wish I had the Clark Moody dashboard. I think, don't quote me on this, it's like 5 billion. Might be a little bit plus or minus. Off the top of my head, that's what I think it is. Every year, that needs to go higher, right? And remember that the halving cuts the rewards in half, right? So if the rewards are cut in half and the annual mining revenue continues to grow year after year, what needs to change in that equation? The price, right? So that's why I said, like, that's what I've been saying, is that I don't care about the Bitcoin price. To me, that's irrelevant. What I care about is the Bitcoin hash rate, because that is, the price will follow. Like, it's inevitable, right? The miners need to get paid, you know? And with miners getting paid, and this kind of goes back to game theory, guess what? The network gets even stronger. And if the network gets even stronger, Bitcoin becomes more valuable, right? So it's kind of like this weird dance, man, that, like, just everyone's going by their incentives, but that all, like, pushes Bitcoin forward, right? So, you know, like, if people have this misunderstanding that it's like Bitcoin's going to stay at $11,000 forever, if that's the case, Bitcoin's going to go to zero, because miners are going to keep getting paid less and less and less. So it's, and if miners get paid less and less and less, more miners will drop out. And then if more miners drop out, the chain security actually gets weaker, right? So Bitcoin has to pump. Now, obviously, there's going to be some point where it's going to start leveling out. And I think that, I think that will happen, but not, we're many, 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 many years from there. Like, I would say, you know, at least a decade or two, I would say two plus. Right. And what Coinicris was saying in the chat is like mining death spiral, that won't happen because, and that's another, like, a lot of people, like, worry about that. The mining death spiral won't happen because the Bitcoin difficulty changes, right? And also, man, the financial incentives are there, right? And what's awesome is that if more miners drop out, right, miners will come in to pick up, you know, to pick up the work, because it remains profitable to mine, right? So, man, Satoshi was really, really, really smart the way that he designed it. And it's literally designed to go up, like, literally.
Yeah, I just want to pop in to say Bitcoin has no top because fiat has no bottom. And we're trading something, our fiat, which is not scarce, for something that is extremely scarce. Will be the most scarce asset instrument in the universe. As, like, throughout the halvings, it'll get there. It's just a matter of time.
Man, I don't know about you guys, but I swear at the end of every one of these shows, I just get, like, more bullish and more bullish. I just, oh, it feels so good to be this bullish. Anyone want to add a few more hot takes before we wrap this show up? Nope. All right. So we're mute it for a moment, Justifer, and restart it. Yeah. Okay. So we're gonna end this. we're gonna end this on the meme review, like we've been adding that to the end of all our shows, a meme review. And this was a meme that I was a part of. You could say that I Sean Combs or Suge Knighted this one. I executive produced this meme. I saw Denver at Denver Bitcoin. He posted this video, and then we got RD Bitcoin to do it. So here, you can unmute it, and if you can restart it so that the people on the video can go in, and then I'll try to explain it afterwards. So it's a semi-truck blasting through 12K, 20K, it's hitting bears, 100K. Blasting through all these monuments, 500K, Money Printer, Wall Street, 1 million, banks, JP Morgan. It's just a semi truck demolishing it, hitting the Fed, the ECB, taxation without representation, 10 million per coin, inflation, very last card, nation states. And then it says the Bitcoin standard achieve, and it's the hodler driver just laughing. Oh man, I love that meme. It's so good. That the end of that meme gets me going every time. So I'll put the meme in the chat or the show notes so that we can get it. But what's your guys' thoughts on that meme? Definitely getting everyone bullish.
Epic, man.
I loved it.
See any shitcoin memes like that?
No, they can't come close to that. Bitcoin's got the best memes. Was that Coinagers?
Do you know who's driving that car?
It's the Mythbuster dude. I forget what his name is, but
no, dude, that's Nick in
Top Gear.
It's Nick. No, that's a Mythbuster guy. It's the like the redheaded guy in Mythbusters with the glasses.
Wait, I kind of jumped in. Coinagers, what are you gonna say?
I was just saying that I think that's like one of the best ever.
Let's go. All right, well let's just do a wrap up. Anyone want to wrap it up? Nick, you want to show us out?
Thanks everyone to coming out for another episode of Bitcoin Kindergarten. Over the next few weeks and months, me and Optimus, mainly me as well, because I've been working with Drinks in Quarantine on Thursdays, but a lot of big things coming up for this podcast. I think we're going to try and increase the production value, the videos on YouTube, etc., and just overall make this a much better experience for everyone, and hopefully drive some more people in here, and I'm really excited for it.
Let's go. And we're definitely going to do that, and also super stoked to officially meet Nick in person. We're going to meet up at Bitblock Boom. So we'll probably do something cool over there. But anyone want to lead us out with some wisdom? Jim, you want to drop some knowledge on us?
Oh, you got to give me a topic. I mean,
Jim's rant moment. Why they should buy Bitcoin? Why are you bullish?
Because if you're going to go to work and have some of your productivity left over, you got to find a place to stick it. And the US dollar is not that place. And if you want to minimize your long-term risk by not having to invest in stocks or some other crazy manipulated market, consider Bitcoin. Take a look at it, study it, ask a million questions until you can figure out how to break it. Because once you figure out you can't break it, you're going to want to get some.
Beautiful. If they're listening and they haven't stacked yet, they should definitely stack after that one. Coinicris, Jackie, Jessifer, and Abysmo, 2A, Nico, you guys want to say a last word?
Yeah, I could throw something in, and it actually kind of rolls on what Jim just said. You know, I tweeted out once upon a time that every single day I used to wake up and try to destroy Bitcoin, and every day I can't, so I stack more sats. That is still true to this day.
Oof. Beautiful. Dang. Is that a tweet yet? Because that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah. It was an oldie.
All right. Well, you'll have to retweet that, or I'll have to look that one up.
Agreed. Retweet that. That was good.
That was really good. So I take back whatever I said. Don't be responsible. Just buy as much Bitcoin as possible. You know, if you have to live under a bridge or make your bank account negative, like me and Nick, go for it.
Let's go.
This is not financial advice.
Time preference. Some time preference just changed during the show, I think.
Yeah, exactly. We got Nico very bullish, so we definitely adjusted his time preference. Just for Nabismo.
I didn't think that was even possible. Nico seems about one of the most bullish people I ever met.
No, dude, I felt bad because I was like, okay, this is a podcast. You have to behave, you know, like don't curse, be on your best behavior. And I was like, you have to be responsible. But then I realized, why preach? Why say something that you're not doing yourself? You know,
go all in.
Just invest in things you don't understand, like DeFi, and do your homework. Get to understand Bitcoin, like Jim suggested, because that's how you're gonna find your not only your conviction, but also just a better understanding of how to start a business later. So stack sats, spend fiat on Bitcoin.
Let's go. Beautiful. Jackie, 2A, Nabismo, you want to lead us out? Nah. Well, it's all right.
If you do buying Bitcoin, you're doing the right thing.
Let's go. Beautiful and succinct. All right, guys. Well, this has been episode 20 of Bitcoin Kindergarten. We'll see you. Well, actually, we might not necessarily see you next week. We'll see if Nick and I are able to meet up and get a live stream going on that day. We'll be flying into Dallas for BitBuck Boom. So we'll definitely have some cool stuff for you guys next week, but it might not be particularly on Thursday. But without any interruptions into the schedule, we'll be back every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And so it's good having you guys. Peace out.